Today's episode is brought to you by Supplements Made Simple, evidence-based supplements formulated by me, ensuring that you and your family get a meaningful health benefit from your daily supplement routine. Supplements Made Simple is available in pharmacies nationwide or online at mars.ie. Good morning. Today's guest is Miss Shalini Wiseman, and I'm so excited to speak to Shalini today because I refer so many of my patients to you and they always report back wonderful things. You're always so popular with my patients. So you're a pelvic floor physiotherapist here in Cork, and I see you as well on educational webinars for GPs, educating GPs about pelvic floor health. So thank you so much. Welcome, Miss Shalini Wiseman. Tell me, Shalini, firstly, what is the pelvic floor?
So pelvic, first of all, thank you, Dorian, for inviting me. I'm really excited because this is my first podcast. So pelvic floors basically is a big bunch of muscles that go from the tailbone to your pubic bone. But a lot of us have an assumption that it's just a sling of muscles, but it's much more diamond-shaped muscles. So they're also related to your hip muscles. So they have a function of not just maintaining continence, so your bladder and bowel continence, but it also allows for sexual function. So it allows to expand, to allow for entry. It also prevents any organs from prolapsing into your vaginal or your rectal areas. One of the biggest function of pelvic floor muscles is actually it's a stabilizer. So when you have, when you do jumping activities and running and stuff, your pelvic floors also play a role in mm-hmm. all the activities you play. And that's something a lot of people don't take into consideration because we only think our pelvic floor works to maintain for continence and nothing more.
Yeah.
So pelvic floor has a very multifunctional role.
It is.
It can actually affect how we breathe as well. So a lot of times people don't consider that their breathing dysfunctions could be correlating and correlating to pelvic floor dysfunctions. So there's a big interplay that respiratory dysfunctions can have with pelvic floor dysfunction. So there's a lot of impact pelvic floor can have on your life.
Yeah.
So their role as just for continence is not their only role.
Yes, it's far more wide reaching than just incontinence. And like you were saying as well, our breathing, because when we take a big breath in, our diaphragm pushes down, and then that has an effect as well then on the pelvic floor, doesn't it?
Absolutely. So if you're an abdominal breather or what we call a diaphragmatic breather, as we breathe in, our diaphragm expands and our lungs expands. And as our diaphragm expands, our pelvic floor also lengthens to just allow for that room for everything to kind of descend down gently. And then as we breathe out, our diaphragm contracts to push the air out of the lung and our pelvic floor returns back to normal tone. So as we are sitting here and talking, our pelvic floor is actually moving in a very gentle way, like a squid or a jellyfish up and down. So it is actually working while we are talking at a very, very low grade level. And that's what's happening with a lot of people. When we change our breathing pattern or if there's any dysfunction, say a childbirth or trauma and thing, there is that little synchrony that changes. And actually, that's where we come into play, is looking not just from a pelvic floor point of view, but looking at a full body approach.
Yes.
So a lot of times with the girls I would have trained in the maternity hospital, I would say, you know, we have to kind of get out of the tunnel and look at it from a full body approach. So if you're only looking at someone from, okay, just pelvic floors, which is vital, which is important, but at some stage you don't take it out and see how are they breathing? How is their pressure management? Are they pulling in their tummy and holding? Are they posterior tilted and constantly clenching their butt muscles? They're going to carry on with issues of pressure because of prolapse or pain with sex because of tight muscles or actually even overactive bladder or an urgency because their muscles are constantly tight. So pelvic floor has a role. But how your pelvic floor functions in relation to the rest of your body has also a role to play.
It's just so fascinating. Yeah. And that's really why I wanted to get you here today to talk to people about this, because you have such a wide-reaching role. And, you know, there is so much more to our pelvic floor, you know, than just those muscles, than just incontinence, the way we're breathing, our diaphragm, how we sit, our posture. And as well, as you said, you know, women, we oftentimes were like pulling in our tummy, but that might not necessarily be the best thing for us. So, you know, that you have much more of a role, like in terms of a kind of a whole body, you know,
approach.
Health.
Yes.
Yeah, whole body approach.
Yeah.
So what types of things, what types of conditions can a pelvic floor physiotherapist help with?
So we can start seeing you antenatally. So if you have antenatal pelvic girdle pain, We can look after that. We have also seen research showing that if you have persistent antenatal pelvic girdle pain, you actually can have affection to your pelvic floor muscles where the muscles can be tight. Mm. So we can look after you from an antenatal point of view. We also can go through pelvic floor preparation, which is very vital. But from pelvic floor conditions, we look after incontinence, overactive bladder, hypertonic pelvic floor, tight pelvic floor. If you have pain with sex, which is dyspareunia, vaginismus, vulvodynias, chronic pelvic pain syndrome, such as interstitial cystitis, painful bladder syndrome, endometriosis. So there's a wide variety of conditions we as physios are actually seeing. Yeah. Now, I wouldn't like to kind of say that, oh, we can cure everything. Some of them has to be multidisciplinary management with prolapse. Like, for instance, with prolapse, you do need pessary intervention, or with endometriosis, you need your GP on board with regards to contraceptions and, and medication and stuff. And you might even need a gynecologist on board in many of the conditions. So, yeah, there is a big multidisciplinary role we fit into very nicely.
Absolutely. And that's, you know, that's the essence of, you know, I suppose, delivery of healthcare, isn't it? It's the multidisciplinary approach.
And I think that's the fun part of my healthcare, the multidisciplinary approach.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. You know, because, you know, a lot, as I was saying to you just before we started recording, a lot of patients come to me. You know, and I can offer, you know, whether it's medication or organizing scans or investigations, but a lot of the time as well, they really, really need your help, your input,
yes,
you know.
Yeah. And actually, I forgot to say, even in the perimenopausal period, if you have a lot of women getting recurrent urinary tract infection, they might be lacking estrogen and they might need to go on something like an estrogen pessary. But a lot of times these women have very tight pelvic floors, and actually reviewing a physio for that can make a huge difference. So, you know, perimenopausal women are a big group that we do kind of need to start paying attention to as well.
Yeah.
You know, and they might be carrying a, you know, with the past history of birthing, they might be carrying a trauma in a very pre-symptomatic silent stage. And they go through the changes and suddenly that dysfunction starts rearing its head.
Yes.
So that's where the GPs can pick things up in a perimenopausal state, because the first port of call for a lot of patients is their GP, and then passing them on to us, it makes a huge difference.
Yeah, that's a really good point. That I was speaking with consultant gynecologist Dr. Breffni Anglam actually recently in a recent podcast, and she made that exact same point, that difficulties that might have always been present, or, you know, a small bit of prolapse, they don't declare themselves until that estrogen level drops in perimenopause and menopause. So you were discussing some of the conditions there that you can treat and play a role in managing. And, you know, I don't think that there's a woman listening that hasn't been affected by some part of this, whether, you know, it's chronic pelvic pain or antenatal pain or recurrent urinary tract infections, pain during intercourse, overactive bladder. These are all very, very common. And what I think, whilst these conditions are very common, going to a pelvic floor physiotherapist isn't common. So that's what I really wanted to get you here, so that people can be aware that there is this very valuable and real expert and specialized care available to people.
Yes, absolutely. And there's the same physios in the maternity hospital. There are a good amount of pelvic floor physios outside in the private as well. And I think there are three areas where you can do almost a pelvic floor check. One is in the antenatal phase, in terms of preparing your pelvic floor for labor, which can actually could prevent certain issues such as third and fourth degree tears, prolapse and stuff. So that's where I would recommend women to get themselves checked, is in the antenatal phase, and to see their viability, whether they have, especially if women have had issues with wearing tampons or pain with sex, and then they're pregnant, advising them to get their pelvic floor reviewed is actually useful. The second stage of women's life is postnatal. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of them get checked at 6 weeks, and I don't like women coming to me at 6 weeks postnatal, because what I'm looking at their pelvic floor, when I'm looking at their pelvic floor, what I'm finding is that I'm looking at them when they're passive. I kind of like them to come to me when they're 16 or 18 weeks postnatal, when they're active. I want these women to go and do things. Mm-hmm. So whether it be running or CrossFit or weight training or a Zumba class, or even jumping with the kids on a trampoline after 16 weeks postnatal, not before.
Okay.
Come to me when you're active, because I can actually then treat you for issues that you're having. So if you're getting yourself checked for your postnatal review with a physio at 6 or 8 weeks and you're passive and all you're doing is going for a walk, that's, I'm just giving you a checklist and ticking things that are fine without actually testing and loading your pelvic floor. So I kind of prefer that. So that's a second stage women should look at, getting assessed by a pelvic floor physio. And the third stage in their life women need to look at is when they have perimenopausal changes. So if all of a sudden you're finding you're quite dry, or you're finding you're having irritation after sex, or recurrent UTIs, or pain with sex, or you suddenly are feeling a bit of a bulge and it comes and goes, that's the kind of stage where there is a you know, the pre-symptomatic stage is starting to become symptomatic, and you do want to get that checked, because that's only going to get worse. Then you could pretty much land on a surgical bed straight away, and that's where physiotherapists like myself have a huge role to play, because we can actually prevent you going into a surgical situation unnecessarily. So I think those are the three stages women should consider getting their pelvic health checked, and that'll give them that longevity. Now, of course, if you are having issues such as prolapse or incontinence with running, or just incontinence and prolapse, come and see us way before that. Do you know? But review yourself as a preventative in these three stages, and it'll prevent you from going and seeing us when you're actually really, really bad.
Okay, I love that. That's really nice advice. You know, prevention is always better than cure.
Absolutely.
And, you know, pelvic floor physiotherapy, we need to start thinking of it, you know, like going for a checkup, like we go for our cervical screening, or we go for our dental health checks,
absolutely,
you know, or your GP check.
GP checkup, you know, or a mammogram.
Yes, your mammograms.
And like, this is one of my advice to, and I would give a lot of talks to gyms and stuff, and I would tell women, after 45, start looking at your vulva. You need to know how your vulva looks. You should be able to pick your vulva up in a lineup.
Oh, okay.
Basically, you should be able to say, that's a bit changed. There's something not right there. Do I need to go to my GP and see what's going on? And it could be a little bit of discoloration, especially for Asian women like me. Pigmentation and discoloration is a big thing. And a lot of times that can be a bit dangerous. So after 45, women should check their vulvas regularly.
Okay.
And that's not advertised enough again.
Yes.
You know, and like, learn to pick your vulva up from a lineup.
Okay.
You
know, because there's a lot of messaging about being breast aware and knowing what your breasts look like and what they feel
like.
And that we could all probably pick out our breasts in the lineup, but definitely not our vulva.
Vulvas, exactly.
So what are we looking for, Shalini?
So you're looking for changes. So is there any kind of discoloration, pigmentation, mold? Are you a bit more itchy? Is there any white change in terms of the vulva being a bit more atrophied? So those are the things that you want to keep an eye on.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times, so say for vaginal atrophy, you might start with just pain with sex, or with incontinence because there's a muscular change from the atrophy happening. But by the time these women come to us, you are in a very difficult area of trying to rectify or reverse it.
Yes.
So I think if women are looking at themselves and checking themselves from the age of 45 onwards, you can catch things a lot quicker.
Yes.
Yeah. And also knowing what is normal for you versus, that looks a bit different, is really, really important.
Okay, so that you can go and act on it. And, you know, in the first instance, you can just check in with your pelvic floor physiotherapist because I think as well, a lot of people think that they need a referral from me to you. But
No, I don't need me at all. Other than seeing the physios in the hospital where you require a GP or a consultant referral, all of us here, we're pretty much walk-in clinic, and we're pretty good in kind of saying, actually, this is beyond our remits. We wouldn't be able to sort this out. Or, you know, you're actually a third degree anterior wall prolapse or a third degree uterine descent. We'll try a ring, but I think you need to go and see a consultant and we would then write to your GP and reverse back in. So, but most of the times, most women's health physios are happy to take a walk-in.
Like that, there's obviously in the hospital system, there is, you know, referrals might be required, but, you know, for private physios who are available like yourself, you know, patients can make their own appointment. So you were speaking there about atrophy. So atrophy, you know, that's a normal term for you and I, but for somebody listening, they might know that is, you know, what, so for vaginal atrophy, that's thinning of the skin.
So the way I'd say is, if you think of a rose petal, when you get a fresh rose, it's much more plumpy. And after a few days, it gets a bit more paper-like and thin.
Yeah.
That's exactly what you're kind of looking for. There's a bit more. And what you will find, there's tears a lot more easier. It's a lot more drier. You're a little bit more prone for fungal infections and stuff. So that's what you're actually looking for.
Yes.
And if and then it, you'd find the entrance of your vagina can be a bit more tighter. Entry, you know, penile entry can be quite sore. So all of those signs that you can look for. What happens with a lot of vaginal atrophy is the muscles get very stiff and fibrous as well.
Yes.
So though you're looking for vulvar changes, the inside also changes.
Yes.
The rugae of your vagina. So for those who don't know what rugae is, when you look at a vagina, you're actually thinking it's like a canal, but it's not. It's like the pleats of your skirt. Those skirts actually start getting thinner and much more stiffer. And hence, that actually makes the muscles of your pelvic floor a lot more fibrous. And suddenly, women are complaining of incomplete emptying, urinary incontinence. They could be like, I get up from a chair and I could be leaking, or recurrent urinary tract infections and stuff. And that actually is all linked to vaginal atrophy. So while your GP can help a huge amount with regards to estrogen and stuff. But again, coming back in and look, getting a physio assess to get length into your pelvic floor and then start some amount of pelvic floor exercise to strengthen your pelvic floor can be preventative. And this might be for life. You might need to come in and out.
Yeah.
You wouldn't need to see the physio every day, but you might, check in with your physio once in 3 months or once in 6 months. And that might keep things good along with estrogen cream. So that's a big role to play.
Yeah. So that's really important, in particular for perimenopausal and postmenopausal women.
Absolutely,
that vaginal atrophy.
Yeah.
And to speak to your GP about vaginal estrogen, it's so important.
Important, yeah.
So, one of the other things as well that I refer women to you for a lot is pelvic pain. So if we have a woman with pelvic pain or dyspareunia, pain during intercourse, but there's no cause found. We've done all of the scans, done all of the swabs, they've seen the gynecologist, and there's no, pathology. And so then we would refer to you to get your assessment. I think it's so important.
And this is my favorite area
of my field.
I did my master's in actually dyspareunia and chronic pelvic pain. So chronic pelvic pain, I would divide it into two lot, or not me, scientific world divides it into two lot. You have cyclical and non-cyclical. Cyclical is far more easier to identify because they literally can tell you when it's happening. Non-cyclical is there pretty much all the time. They can have pain with sex, pain with activities. They could be sitting and they find they can have issues. A lot of times you kind of want to rule out, is it actually pelvic floor or is it one of the nerves that's causing injury? So history taking is really important in chronic pelvic pain. Majority of the time, they will have some sort of a pelvic floor affection. Mm. So a lot of us have this assumption that if you have tight, overactive pelvic floors, that means your pelvic floors are, you want tight muscles. But actually, the way you think about it is having a tight calf.
Okay, yeah.
So if you have a tight calf muscle, you're not able to load on your heel. And every time you try to run, you're not getting that nice lengthening of the muscle and you're in a lot of pain either at your ankle or your knee or your hip and it can carry forward.
Yeah.
And some of them might come to you with knee pain and they've not looked at the calf muscle and you're only treating knee. And that's exactly how it is. With chronic pelvic pain, you might get lapro EUA investigation, but no one's looked at the pelvic floor as the main culprit.
Mm.
And the problem with the pelvic floor is it's quite reactive. So even if you have an inflammatory IBS, some of the pelvic floor muscles can tend to go tight.
Yes.
So it can get tightened and shortened. Take that along with the history of birthing and something happening with birth and that not being rectified as well. So there's an element of weakness. So the muscle that is weak will always shorten and tighten to stabilize.
Yeah.
Hence, then you end up with this chronic inflammatory condition or some sort of a pathological issue that has caused the pelvic floor to go back more tighter.
Yeah.
And the pelvic floor then sits there and gets tighter and tighter. No one has addressed it.
Yes.
So if you, say, have painful bladder syndrome and they have had a bladder washout and they have had cystostat to calm the bladder down, but they've not had pelvic floor physio.
Yeah.
The pelvic floor sits there getting more and more angry and agitated. It might calm down a bit with medication, but it's still in that shortened, tightened state.
Yeah.
And unless and until someone actually goes and lengthens it, releases it, teaches women how to keep their pelvic floor in a normal tone, look at their body and see, are they clenching? Are they holding their breath all the time? Are they under so much of stress that they're all apical breathers? So they're chest breathers and shallow breathers. So they're driving their pelvic floor to be tight.
Yeah.
So looking at it from that point as well makes a huge difference. So chronic pelvic pain is not It's really a rewarding thing, because when you find that chink in the chain and you can fix it, it's really interesting. But till you find that, it takes a while to go, bingo, that's what it is. Let's send you down this path and see, you know, it could be a colorectal surgeon or a urogynecologist.
Yes.
But we have to rule out pelvic floors in this, because pelvic floors are the silent culprits in many of chronic pelvic pain cases.
That is just so fascinating to hear you talk about that, because that situation is so common in medicine.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, that we have people.
And I've always said this, and even when I worked in CUMH, I've always said this, is that our junior doctors should be able to look at a pelvic floor and recognize whether it's a normal tone or is it actually very tight and fibrous.
Yes.
So when you're, even the physios, when they examine, they're just going in, they're looking for pathology and they come out, or they're looking at muscle power and they come out, but actually not going along superficial and deep muscles and seeing for tightness and change in the muscle, you're missing out a bigger picture.
Yes.
And then coming out and looking at the full body of the person and seeing where are they directing their pressure from, how are they standing, how are they lifting. You know, you can be having someone who's caring for an elderly person, and that lifting, when they lift, they could be clenching with all their might their pelvic floor, and it keeps it tight. And then they're complaining of very, very bloated abdomen and very, very constipated, or, you know, there's a knock-on effect with things that can happen.
Yes.
So unless they address all that, we ain't going to get rid of the solution.
Yeah.
Or the problem, more like.
Yeah. So it's like a house of cards. It's just one thing, you know, can, you know, if you have that tight pelvic floor, it can cause symptoms somewhere else, and then you think that the problem is in my abdomen, but it's actually coming from down below in your pelvic floor.
Exactly, exactly.
And as well, if you're having that shallow breathing, like your breath work as well, is so important.
So important, because when people don't actually realize that your pelvic floor has to move as you breathe. Here's a little trick. Just try it.
Yeah.
If you just squeeze up your back passage and sit there, and now see where you're breathing. Try breathing.
It's hard. It's
hard, really hard.
It's very hard to take a big breath in.
If you are going about the whole day clenching your pelvic floor, you're not able to breathe.
No.
So where are you going to breathe? You're going to actually use your upper respiratory muscles, which is very shallow breathing. Yeah. And where do you see people who do upper respiratory breathing? Your asthma patients, your COPD patients.
Yes.
So that's that. And women, if they don't have respiratory issues and have changed because they're constantly clenching their pelvic floors, they're going to actually have knock-on effects over time.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, actually, people listening at home, so you if you really tighten your pelvic floor and
And then
really
try to breathe and see where you're going.
You can't take a nice big, you know, breath in.
Till you let go of your pelvic floor and you can go, oh, I can breathe again.
There it is again.
Yeah. So there's an overemphasis on Kegels. And actually, I think you need to change that emphasis on Kegels, because there's loads of research coming back saying that just that contract release is not actually a good, efficient way of doing pelvic floors.
Yeah.
The efficient way of doing pelvic floors is with your breathing. So the way to do pelvic floors is just get the person to lie down, breathe into their belly, to fill their belly with air, blow out. And as they're blowing out, pull up their back passage gently. And it prevents that quick pull up, let go, and prevents that whole dysfunction and dynamics of the pelvic floor changing.
Yeah.
So I think women should be taught to do pelvic floors with their breathing, then just pull up your back passage, pull up your front, hold to what you can hold and let it go.
Yeah.
Because that's actually them holding their breath or holding their tummy to get a perceived contraction of their pelvic floors.
Yeah.
Then doing it in the natural way with their breathing.
This is definitely really brand new and really exciting information for me to learn, because always when I listen to people talking about, you know, prolapse or incontinence and things like that, and I think, oh, I better do my Kegels, and then I tense everything up.
Yeah.
But that's actually just, that's not the way
it needs to be
done.
No, you're changing your dynamics a huge amount. So like lie down, do the breathing. And for women who are weak, I would never advise them to do it in the lights, in traffic and things that I'm like, no, take time out.
Yeah.
Do it like meditation.
Yes.
Yeah. So you can focus in your breathing and then focus in your pelvic floors. Like you wouldn't do, if you had a weak back, you wouldn't do pelvic tilts in the light, right?
No.
In your traffic light. Yeah. So it's similar to that. So if you are having, not a dysfunctional pelvic floor, and there's an issue with synchrony between your breathing and your pelvic floor, I want you to take time out, focus and do it.
Yeah.
You're only holding your pelvic floor maybe for 3 or 4 seconds, because that might be what your endurance actually is. So it's not going to take half an hour. It will pretty much take you about 10 minutes in total.
Yeah.
But that 10 minutes of meditation It actually will help calm your pelvic floors.
Yeah.
So if you do a focused, directed breathing with pelvic floors, you're far better than just doing it randomly here and there.
Okay, I love this. This is really...
Especially if you have a problem.
Yeah.
Yes.
I love this. This is a real learning point for me because I think always up until now, I thought, like for me, when I, you know, just very briefly thinking of pelvic floor, I think of Kegels and I think, oh, do your Kegels, you know, while you're brushing your teeth or, you know, at the traffic lights. But it's different. It needs to be more considered.
Yeah. Exactly. That's the word. Considered. Yeah. I'm going to use that one.
Yeah. And I really like as well, you've said the word synchrony a few times. So that's really, it's important as well to remember that it is kind of this harmony of all of our muscles, like from, you know, from our upper respiratory tract to our diaphragm to our abdomen down into the pelvis.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And you'd see even your postnatal population, if, you know, there, even if you don't end up with a massive traumatic birth and you have a very nice, normal birth, your pelvic floor has been under that stretch and pressure for a good 9 months. Yeah. So when you are doing pelvic floors, you want to take time out to do it.
Yeah.
Not like, you know, while you're having a cup of tea, do your pelvic floors because you're not going to get the time with the baby.
Yes.
And my biggest advice to a lot of postnatal and antenatal mums are we spend so much of time and energy on stretch mark creams, the correct breastfeeding, creams for not letting your boobs sag.
Yeah.
And not a stitch is done for your pelvic floors.
Yes.
We don't prepare our pelvic floors for labor.
Yeah.
We don't give them any kind of support postnatally in terms of good supportive underwears to help take the pressure off in the first 6 weeks of labor.
Yeah.
And we expect it to turn around and function when it has been the main marathon runner in this relay of marathon we call labor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Than any other part of your body.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, we really, really need to look after our pelvic floors antenatally. Forget your stretch mark creams.
Yes.
No one cares. Do you know
Because, I mean, say your stretch marks will fade. They will go away.
Yeah. And we live in a cold country. Thank God we don't need to wear bikinis. Like, we're not in Spain. We don't care.
It doesn't matter.
We go for 2 weeks to Spain and we're done.
Exactly. Yeah. And nobody knows you. So it doesn't matter.
Exactly. Yeah. Or you need to be like the Indian women who really don't care. They expose their sari and their belly and walk around the place.
Exactly. Yeah. Like you, but your stretch marks have a negligible impact on your quality of life.
Exactly. You know? And you look after your pelvic floors the day you get pregnant and you look after it from 35 weeks onwards where you go and do your perineal massage religiously.
Yeah.
That has a huge knock-on effect in terms of preventing third and fourth degree tears, preventing prolapses. Do your pelvic floor exercises from 28 weeks at least, if you can't get it in earlier, if you have a lot of morning sickness and stuff, forget in the first trimester. But from second trimester, try and get your pelvic floor exercises going. Do your pelvic floor perineal massage from 35 weeks onwards. That actually can be preventative in your postnatal stage and right through your life.
Yeah.
So look after your pelvic floors when you're pregnant. We really, really don't care about our pelvic floors when we are pregnant.
Yeah.
And we just expect to pass a baby through it.
Mm-hmm.
Expect this whole big bunch of muscles to then turn around and kick in and allow us to go and run a marathon and lift 10 kgs weight and do CrossFit and do burpees. And we've never once considered what we're doing to it. We actually give far more care to our breast with supportive bras and stuff.
Yes.
And again, like, you know, wearing good supportive knickers in your postnatal stage is really vital because it just holds and lifts everything up.
Yeah.
So if you think about it, if your breast is going down, you'd hold something up. Same thing for your pelvic floors.
Totally. Yeah. And, you know, one of the things as well we recommend, you know, for women with mastalgia, you know, for breast pain, we always are recommending the importance of a good supportive bra.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've never even thought about, you know, supportive underwear.
Yeah. You know, you don't need to buy anything expensive.
Yeah.
You know, you get those like Spanx-like knickers and Duns and pennies. Knees and stuff, they're more than enough for you.
Okay.
Just good support. And I would normally tell women, go up a size. And as you're coming down a size postnatally, just keep going down a size.
Okay.
And that'll kind of keep you going.
Okay.
One of the things I would kind of say is get good supportive sports shorts when you start running and stuff. So like the EVB shorts, the SRC shorts, they're really, really good just to take the impact off your pelvic floor. They're worth your investment in that sense, especially when you start running.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know?
That is such a really, really wonderful point, Shalini. And I've never thought about it like this. you know, that there is all of this talk, you know, about, as you said, you know, being breast aware or, you know, stretch mark creams and things like that. And, you know, they are important. But in terms of your quality of life, if your pelvic floor isn't functioning properly, the fallout that can have, you know, if it's causing pelvic pain, pain during intercourse, incontinence, those are things that are just so upsetting and just have such a horrible impact on people's quality of life, their work, their relationships.
Absolutely.
You know,
yeah.
So it is so important.
And women
to mind
are very
it.
Good adapters. A lot of my women have learned to live around conditions.
Yes, yes.
When they don't need to.
Yeah.
We're here to help. So I have women who have prolapses and they kind of manage their life around it. They're like, oh, by 5 o'clock, it's going to head down. So yeah, I'm actually going to take a break around 5 o'clock and then I'm fine again. They need to go and see one of us.
Yeah.
Do you know, they need to get themselves strengthened. They might need a ring to hold things up. So women are great adapters. So paying attention to your pelvic floor instead of adapting around it will pay rewards.
Women are great at just saying nothing and putting up with these awful symptoms and just and thinking that, you know, that there's no help or that they're the only one who suffered from this. You mentioned about a pessary, a ring pessary, and you were saying before we started recording that you can just put a pessary in and out kind of as you need
it. Yes. So here's the thing. Just because you see a prolapse, it's an anatomical descent, or what I'd call a sag of your vagina.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean if you're not symptomatic, you don't need a ring.
Yes.
Okay. However, I can get women who are symptomatic only with exercise. Yeah. So in those cases, if they are doing a lot of box jumps or if they're doing a lot of running, which is high impact, bouncy movement, that prolapse is also bouncing.
Yeah.
But they don't have symptoms with anything else other than exercise. So giving them that support while exercising makes a difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would quite often fit them with a ring. I'd leave it in for a week, see how they get on, and then I teach them how to take it in and out themselves.
Okay.
So if they have symptoms only with exercise, they put it on and they go do their exercise and they're back. If they feel heaviness or dragging only before their periods, they use the ring just for before their periods.
Yeah.
And then once they get their periods or after their periods, they take it out and they're good to go. So it's giving that little, you know, structural support for when it's at its weakest and when things get better because of hormonal change, you take it out and you're good to go.
That's
so,
what
and
this
I think
is.
A,
yeah,
that's
I love
a very
this.
Underrated use of pessaries. And majority of the young women are very, very happy. Actually, I'm doing a disfavor. Majority of my women of most ages, unless they have dexterity issue with their hand, they're quite happy to self-manage their pessaries.
Brilliant. Yeah.
You know,
and I've never heard of this concept of just a kind of as required pessary, but it makes so much sense.
So even if you are leaking and it's a structural issue that's causing you to leak, such as, say, a bladder instability.
Yeah.
So no amount of pelvic floor strength is going to get you right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where, but you're only leaking with exercise, a ring with a knob.
Yeah.
Is actually useful just for that.
Perfect. And then you can take that out when you're not exercising.
Not exactly. Yeah.
Okay. That's so useful. I love that because as well, I think there can maybe be a little bit of maybe almost pressure in women that, you know, if you're having that stress incontinence or leaking when you exercise or leaking when there's pressure or coughing or running, that it's because you're not strengthening your pelvic floor enough, you know?
And sometimes women are strong enough.
Yes.
But actually, it's a structural issue.
Yeah.
And they need surgery at some stage. And a lot of the surgeries right now, because the mesh issue has been put away.
Yeah.
So then we are very limited and your options are conservative management. So internal support devices then can be useful at that stage.
Brilliant.
Just to buy them time and give them quality of life.
Quality of life, absolutely. Yeah. And as well, I think, you know, having control and ownership over it yourself as well is very empowering.
Absolutely.
So a pessary for people listening. So I know there's lots of types. So the most common one is like a circle. It's like a kind of a donut shape.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a plastic, but
you have two types. You have PVC and silicone.
Okay.
So PVC is useful for a lot heavier prolapse. But if it is just a hang, which you feel only with exercise, it's not that bad. A silicone one is easier. It's much softer. Women find it easier to hook in and take it in and out as well.
Yes.
So you get the ring pessary. You can get the ring with the knob.
Mm-hmm.
For women who have a very heavy prolapse, for them, the ring with a support might be useful. And you get the ring with a support and a knob.
Yeah.
So that there is that variant that is there. For women who just have very bad incontinence, and it's because their bladder neck is very unstable, mm-hmm. You know, they might have lost a ligament or it might be damaged with childbirth. And whenever they sneeze, laugh, cough, however strong the muscle is, the bladder neck keeps flipping. Yeah. Or when they run, it keeps flipping. There are things like the contiform and stuff that's actually quite useful.
Okay.
Now, before I go into internal, I must speak about the fact that you also want to look and see what is their body doing.
Okay, yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, so if they have like weakness of posterior chain muscles, so if their bum is weak, if their hamstrings are not proper, if their back muscles aren't proper, they're going to overcompensate with their pelvic floor, because if you have a weak bum, your natural reflex is to kind of go into a posterior tilt.
Okay.
Yeah, and you use your hamstrings to kind of give you stability.
Yeah.
So then you can't actually use your pelvic floors properly. Your pelvic floors are naturally in a shortened and tightened position.
Yeah.
How are you running makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
If you're internally rotated, it could be actually your hip muscles that's causing your pelvic floors to...
Yeah.
Cause to be faulty.
Yeah.
You want to listen to yourself run, because a lot of women runners tend to dig their heel into the ground while running. So they're heavy pounders.
Okay.
So you can hear me come. I'm like a little baby elephant. Yeah. So, yeah. So if you are a heavy set runner, you want to actually learn to land more midfoot and not strike your heel as much.
Yeah.
Especially new mums, if they're taking up running, the chance, and they're running with a buggy too.
Yes.
You actually will go backwards and run a little bit.
Yeah.
So you want to get the buggy more at a full arm's length. So you lean forward slightly towards the buggy and run instead of keeping the buggy close to your waist.
Yeah.
And run.
I'm totally blown away. Yeah. Now I see why everyone loves you, Shalini. I don't want the patients.
That's
to
the
see
only
you.
Topic that just comes in here, but, isn't it?
Yeah. Like I've never thought of how you run.
Yeah. So if I just fit a pessary in someone and someone keeps running the way they are doing, unless I look at you from a full picture, I ain't getting you right.
Yeah.
And that's like, you know, I think pessary's changed my career completely. I was like, oh my God, that made a difference. Let me do this more. Yeah. I love pessary because it makes you think, what more can I do? What other pessaries can you fit?
Yeah.
But if I don't get out of that pelvic floor mode and start looking at you more holistically and see where's your pressure derivation from?
Yeah.
How are you holding yourself when you're doing your certain activity?
Yeah.
I ain't going to correct you or get you better.
Yeah.
Do you know? So one of the things I would tell women is to take a picture of themselves running.
Okay.
So you run away from the camera, you run towards the camera. Don't do it when you're fresh, do it when you're tired.
Mm.
So you should be you should have ran at least 2 to 3 kilometers and then you're filming yourself running. So you know exactly what the dysfunction is, and you yourself will go, oh my God, I tend to go completely into a C shape as I get tired.
Yeah.
So because I'm going into a C shape, I'm pounding my heels a lot more. Hence, it's loading my pelvic floors way more than it's able to take. Hence, that's happening. So if I kind of focus my direction and see if I can change myself and land a lot more forward and lean a lot more forward, does it make a difference to my pelvic floors?
Wow.
You know?
Yeah.
How am I breathing? Am I turning into a complete apical breather? So a lot of women, when they need the force, they pull up their pelvic floors, they hold in their tummy, and then they try to get through the power.
Yeah.
Get the power that they require to finish the race.
Yes.
But then they change their breath, and that might be just too much pelvic floor pressure. And you might have done this as a small child, but at that time, you had no dysfunction with your pelvic floor. Your pelvic floor didn't birth a human being through.
Yes, yes.
You know?
Yeah,
So there's a complete anatomical variation that has occurred now, and you need to change
and
that.
And adapt appropriately.
That's it.
It's just so fascinating. It's just a whole body, holistic approach.
Exactly. You have to kind of look at it from a full body.
Yeah.
And then you kind of have to say, okay, we're going to do this with your pelvic floors. I'm going to give you this so that you can go and run, because I don't want to take that away from women because you have 3 kids. That's your sanity.
You got to go.
Like, I mean, is that or murder the whole family? Yeah. You know, that kind of way. So you've got to go do your exercise.
Yeah.
So I don't want to take that away. So this is what I'm giving you, but I need you to change this, and this, you know?
Yeah.
And if you don't change this, this is going to only go south over time. And all I'm doing is band-aid therapy by fixing this, fixing that, giving you this, giving you that, and it's not going to make a difference.
Yeah. Absolutely fascinating. You mentioned something about contiform. What exactly is that?
Contiform is a small little pessary that you put in if you have bladder neck stability. It's not useful if you have a prolapse, because it's too small to hold the prolapse and support your bladder. But if you have someone who has like a proper bladder neck instability and they actually need to go for, say, a TVT, the contiform is useful because it just holds the bladder neck.
Okay.
It looks like a little thimble. That's the way I would kind
yes.
of say it. And it goes
okay.
under the bladder and it kind of sits there. And it comes in small, medium and large.
Okay.
So basically, patients who come to me, I size them and I tell them what size they are. But
yes.
if people can buy it over the internet and get going with it too. So
wow.
generally, you buy a starter pack of small, medium and large. You put the medium in first. You put
yeah.
a bit of gel, put it in as per the instruction. You put the medium in. If the medium falls out, you're going to large. If the medium is too uncomfortable, you're going to small.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is very handy.
Yes,
yeah.
Really important as well for anybody listening that you can actually fit pessaries
yes.
and size people
yes.
for pessaries because
yeah.
Some GPs do that. Not all GPs do it, but
no.
you do it.
I do it.
Well.
And there,
yeah.
I think there are three physios in Cork who are currently doing pessary fitting. So
Brilliant.
The two of them are in the Cork Maternity Hospital and myself outside. I need to find out from the other girls if they're fitting as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
yeah. Brilliant. And then so just... Getting so in terms of if a patient goes to you, say if I've referred someone to you, what I would commonly refer to you would be vaginismus. That's a common thing.
Oh yes, that is that's a quite
yeah
yeah.
Or pain during intercourse.
Yeah.
But what types of you know is there anything you know in terms of you know what are you doing with those patients or talking to them about or what is the management?
My vaginismus patients are of very varied age.
Yes.
Yeah?
Okay.
I can have a young college going student of 18, 19
yeah.
onwards to someone who's much more older.
Mm.
With vaginismus, again, you kind of want to know, is it primary or is it secondary? So the ones who are primary have actually the girls who've never been able to have penetrative sex at all.
Mm-hmm.
They might have an issue, not just with vaginismus, is nothing more than pelvic floor spasm.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they might have an issue of the hymen.
Okay.
So a lot of times when you assess them, if they're primary vaginismus, you'd find that they have a very, you know, they're born with it and their hymen is very obstructed and then they need to go and see their gynecologist to get that corrected.
Okay.
Sometimes it can be actually their hiatus is small.
Mm.
Yeah. So you can get them to do a lot of lengthening. I would give them a lot of dilator therapy. I would work on their pelvic floors myself to try and get the muscles back to normal.
Okay.
I would do dry needling for pelvic floors, which is external, not internal.
Yeah.
Before people go, Jesus, where does she stick needles into? Let's call the medical council. No, it is external,
yeah.
not internal. I would give them a lot of dilators therapy to get going. I would then start introducing vibrators, but not in the sense of how vibrators are actually meant to be used, but in a much more clinical way.
Yeah.
So they're using that to stretch the muscles. They're also learning accommodation because a lot of these girls, because entry has been so painful,
yeah.
you kind of have to get them to learn to let go and accommodate,
mm-hmm.
do you know?
Okay.
And even just getting them to look, get a visual feedback with a mirror to see actually you're holding on.
Yeah.
Can you see, can you let go?
Okay.
And just see, can you open?
Yes.
You know, so there's a lot more to it. But the biggest thing for me is to see whether their primary vaginismus, because they've had it from the get go.
Mm-hmm.
They had their first boyfriend, never able to have sex. Then they tried other boyfriends and it just didn't work for them. And it was like, you know,
they
generally need a medical intervention as well.
OK.
Well, some of the secondary vaginismus is because maybe trauma.
Mm.
Recurrent thrush, recurrent UTIs.
Okay.
You know,
yes.
Vulvodynia and vaginismus are lovely sisters that stay together.
Yeah.
So there can be that kind of an issue that's causing it. So those girls, the ones who would have been like, oh, I was able to have sex for a while. It was fine. And now I'm having this.
Yes.
You know, so generally those girls are because of pelvic floor spasm again. And a lot of them have a lot of pain on entry and things like that.
Yeah.
Some of it can be psychological too. I don't like to say everything is psychological, but there can be some element and we need a psychosexual counselor on board as well. In some of the cases where physio doesn't work, so you've had 6 to 12 sessions of physio and it ain't changing, then you might need to look at Botox. And that works wonderfully.
Wow. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, because a patient actually was recently asking me about that, about Botox for vaginismus. But I didn't know at the time if there was anybody in Cork or Ireland
so
doing that.
So Dr. Susanna O'Sullivan and Professor Barry O'Reilly, they both do
Two
Botox for pelvic.
Cork.
Yeah, yeah. So they do it in Mater Private and Bonds Sickcare Hospital, both of them. Susanna's in Bonds and Professor Barry's in Mater.
Yeah.
I'm not really, I need to find out if there's anyone in the maternity hospital who does it. But I do know Suzanne does it in the maternity hospital as well.
Amazing. Okay. Yeah. And that is, so that's as a treatment, a kind of arm or option for vaginismus.
Yes, but try conservative. So yes, like you have failed with physiotherapy. You need manual therapy, because if you're just using dilators, all you're doing is getting the girth bit going.
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
But you got to think of your muscles like a diamond, yeah, and they need to stretch along that diamond shape.
Yes.
So that's where the physio is useful in terms of giving length to your pelvic floor, because these muscles are shortened.
Yeah.
And you can do all the breathing you want, but at that level of shortness, unless someone is able to go in and get length going, that won't work.
Yes.
So then that's where even the dilators or the TheraWand, which is a little wand that you can use to release your trigger points and get that length and stretching yourself going, that will help you. So if they have tried all that, and they're still in a lot of pain, such that even insertion of your little finger is extremely difficult, then my call is Botox. So within about 4 to 6 sessions, if I have not made a change, I'm kind of going, do you know what? You need to go and see one of the urogynecologists for Botox to your pelvic floor. But my thing with them is within 4 months or 3 months after Botox, they're back in with me.
I was just about to ask you that. You've you're way ahead of me.
So they're back in with me, and then I'm back in with releasing, getting length into their pelvic floor, getting them to know what it feels like to have a normal pelvic floor, because there are women who actually don't know what it feels like not to hold on to their pelvic floor.
Yes.
Let it go. Do you know?
Let it go. Let go of your pelvic floor.
Exactly. So, you know, as much as pelvic floor contraction is important, lengthening is way more important. It's like having tight hamstrings or tight calf muscles. If you constantly are doing calf raises, but you've never actually gone and stretched your calf muscle, you're going to end up with a lot of knee and hip issues.
That is such an important way of thinking about it. Because definitely, as I said, I've always thought, oh, you know, the more like tension and, you know, the more pressure down there, the better.
Better, exactly.
But it's like we stretch before and after we exercise.
Exactly.
Yes.
You said it.
So we need stretch as well.
That's it.
That's definitely it. I love that. Yeah.
So with vaginismus, they need to come back to me 3 months post Botox, and we're back in again, learning to accept what normal feels like. Learning to lengthen, keep the length, learning to accommodate in your pelvic floor. A lot of the girls have developed an aversion for accommodation.
Yes.
So learning to get that accommodation back in makes a huge difference.
Yeah. So as well, then say if there is a Botox, we know that that kind of wears off typically maybe after 4 to 6 months maximum. Would somebody need repeated?
Yes, generally
treatment?
Some of them might need. So I've had a girl who had a bad trauma, and it was a car accident. And after that, she was so bad you couldn't insert a little finger. Like it was that bad. And she's had now about 4 rounds of Botox in the last 2 years.
Okay.
And it has made a big difference.
So it helps, but it is an ongoing treatment.
Yes. Okay, yeah. But they have to come back, because her management was also from a pain management point of view.
Yes.
So they kind of have to look at it again from a full picture, then not just, oh, you've had your Botox.
Sure.
Your muscle should be paralyzed. Off you go. Bye-bye, you know?
It's the multidisciplinary approach.
Because
again,
if they have a fear for accommodation, because they can't accommodate, like, you know, anything going near them. So you have to break that cycle and break that pattern, you know?
Yeah. So fascinating. And then as well, so a lot of people with endometriosis, there's a lot more awareness in recent months and years, I think, about endometriosis, and definitely a lot more patient and doctor education about endometriosis. But something that I don't think is getting enough airtime in the discussion on endometriosis is the role of the pelvic floor physiotherapist.
Absolutely. And it's not just pelvic floor that's affected. A lot of your endometriosis patients will have very tight abdominal muscles.
Mm.
They will have a lot of pain along their back as well and their pelvic floor.
Yeah.
They can have dysfunctional breathing patterns as well. So addressing pelvic floors and addressing the pain issue and how to manage pain is very relevant for endometriosis. But it's very important to know that physiotherapy is not going to cure the endometriosis.
Yes,
we are
yes.
just an adjunct to the treatment.
Well, you are an adjunct. I wouldn't say just an adjunct because, you know, with the, you know, the GP role or the gynecologist role or surgery or whatever it is, you know, endometriosis, it is an MDT input, and, you know, even,
absolutely,
you know, dietitian, psychologist.
Psychology, exactly. Yeah.
Pelvic floor, I don't think it gets spoken about enough, you know,
yes.
so it is important.
Important.
As well.
So if you have a patient with endometriosis who's complaining of pain with sex,
yeah,
or a lot of pain around their pelvic floor around the time of their periods as well, it's well worth their while seeing a pelvic floor physio.
Yeah.
We do make a lot of difference to their quality of life with regards to teaching them pain management.
Yes.
You know, giving them strategies in terms to how to actually look and see how they can manage their pain better.
Yeah.
You know, and that does work. Endometriosis is a bit more of a juggernaut in terms of management than vaginismus.
Sure,
vaginismus is way more
it's
easier.
It's a different thing. It is. Endometriosis is a lifelong condition that you're managing on an ongoing basis. I suppose then it does settle down after menopause, but it is a longer term condition, definitely. And I think as well, you know, just from speaking to you in person, what I'm kind of coming to understand now, when patients are so kind of, after they see you and after you help them, I think they are very empowered because you've educated them so much about what's going on with their body. So now they understand. So now they're not as upset.
That's it.
And not feeling as alone because they're thinking, okay, I actually understand it now.
Yes,
you know?
Absolutely. And this is one thing women should do. You need to talk about it with other women.
Yeah.
We are all in these silos where we're looking after our children. We're talking about the education, school and stuff. And we're all carrying this baggage of different pelvic floor dysfunctions without knowing how to manage it.
Yeah.
And I've had women who have come to me over the years and said, why didn't anyone tell me about you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know?
I know.
And I'm going, that's because we aren't talking.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's really why I want you here, because, you know, I just want to tell everyone about you and tell everyone about the important work the pelvic floor physios
do. Exactly.
And another thing as well, I mean, there's such a long list of things that you can really help with as well, but painful scars or episiotomy scars.
Absolutely. So episiotomy scars, painful scars, we have loads of tricks in our bag to help you with that. Self-management is very important. So like start massaging the scar like 4 to 6 weeks onwards, which does help.
Yes.
Now, sometimes some scars, they need to be redone and that's that.
Okay, yes.
But yes, physio does help a huge amount with scars. There's a lot we can do. Again, if you have scars, you want to be very considered with pelvic floor exercises because if you have a scar and your muscles around it and you're just, it will always be a bit more tighter and sore and you're doing Kegels, you could tend it up a bit more tight. So actually, even in the shower, just introducing a thumb on the scar and just moving it back and forth just to give it a bit more pliability.
Yes.
And then trying extremely gentle pelvic floor with your breathing might actually help it than just going and doing, I need to do my Kegels, it'll get better or, you know.
So, fascinating. So, I mean, I think we've been chatting for about an hour.
We could talk forever.
Around 8 hours. But so maybe we'll need to do a part two or like have this like a regular weekly session.
Yeah, I'd love
something. But is there
anything? There are different topics we can pick up and chat. Yes. So actually we can educate people on it. Do you know? I do think that's relevant.
But so we'll wrap up for today's episode. But just say like if today is part one, is there anything today, Shalini, that we haven't touched on that you do think is important to educate people about?
I think we've been very good.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Okay, good.
We have been really, really good. Like we've gone from, you know, looking at atrophy vulva to pessary management to dyspareunia to, you know, endometriosis. I think we have done a really good job.
Okay, I'm glad. Okay, I'm delighted.
Very good host.
A gold star from Shalini. I'm delighted.
Excellent job. Like we have done a wide range of topics here.
So if patients, if they're listening to you and they think, I think this lady can help me. So how can they contact you?
I always say this, I'm not trying to drum up business for myself.
Because you're a busy woman and you have a very long waiting list. But look.
And I want to do this for a very long time. So what I would say is that there are a few very good pelvic health physios. We have them in Bonds. There are two girls in Bonds who are very good. There's the girl in Kinsale who's very good.
Okay.
So Joe Chaplin, Kinsale, Tracy O'Mahony and Etna in Bonds are very good.
Okay.
Myself in the Cork Clinic and then the CUMH girls. So in West Cork, there is Breed O'Mahony, who is, again, excellent. I've known Breed for a very long time. I think you need a GP referral to get into West Cork, into Bantry Hospital.
Okay.
And there's Andrea Gray in Clonakilty.
Okay.
There's also a girl by the name Sinead McCarthy. She's a women's health physio in Ennis, Okay. Enniskine, that's the place. Yeah.
Okay.
So Enniskine, Ballineen direction.
Yes.
So there are a few of us around. Yeah. So you don't need to travel all the way from West Cork to see someone in Cork.
Yeah.
You are catered by excellent chartered physiotherapists in pelvic health in that region. So
yeah.
Generally, you'd either need a GP referral if they're in the healthcare system.
Yeah.
But private physios, you can pretty much Google them, get their number, call and walk in.
Yes.
Yeah. And we're all pretty good into kind of going, this is beyond our remits. You need to see your GP or you need to get touch with one of the consultants.
Totally. I mean, I find physiotherapists always such a pleasure to work with as a part of the MDT. And as you mentioned as well, the term chartered physiotherapist.
Absolutely.
So important.
Very important.
Yeah. So if somebody so for some of these people you mentioned, you might need a GP referral, but for some you may not. But do so, as you said, like talk to your friends or your sister, your mom, you know, people.
Absolutely.
Might know.
Yeah. And I think it's very important that people talk so they know, OK, actually, I'm not the only one having this issue.
Yeah.
There are other women and I learn a lot from my patients. They come and tell me, use this product, Charlene. It's really, really good. I've actually learned a lot. And that knowledge needs to get around in the community.
Yes.
So actually talking and passing on information among yourself is really, really vital.
Totally.
So talk and so that you kind of know I'm not on this journey on my own. I'm not trying to figure things out for myself. Do you know?
Yeah. Absolutely. You don't have to suffer alone.
Exactly.
Okay. Thank you so much,
Charlene.
Thank
you so much, Dorian. This has been great fun.
Yeah, it has been. Brilliant.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you so much for listening today. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. This episode was sponsored by Supplements Made Simple.